Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 6th, 2020, our first show of the new year. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have lots of new news and information for veterans and their families this evening, so please stay tuned. First, though, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Happy New Year, David, and Happy New Year to everyone out there listening to our show tonight. Yep, the first one of the year. And tonight, you're going to have to sit and listen to David and I continue our discussion about what's going on with the VA. And there's a lot to talk about. And this year, I know David has been working real hard to lining up new guests for the coming year. We got some exciting guests that we'll be telling you more about as those shows get closer to being aired. Let's talk about some of the biggest changes in the VA disability benefit program this past year, which will affect the veterans this next year. The Appeals Modernization Act went into full effect this past February 19, 2019. We're going to continue our discussion about the changes which have resulted from that law, including the new forms and new rules for claims and appeals. We're also going to discuss the new procedures for the Board of Veteran Appeals. One of the new procedures is the ability to do video conferencing right in the lawyer's office or even at the home of the veteran. We're also going to talk about the changes in the past year affecting the so-called Blue Water Navy veterans from the Vietnam War and the expansion of the Agent Orange rules for those veterans, which is supposed to go into effect January of this year. I spoke to a contact of mine down at the St. Pete Regional Office, and he said that he and a lot of his decision review officers have been in training for a while, and they're going to be continuing in training through January and February. And one of the specific issues is the Blue Water Navy veterans and how they're supposed to be handling these files. And before I send it back to David, I just want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, your questions, and you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And so, you know, please call in. We're going to give that number throughout the program, but we really want to hear from you veterans as to what's going on in your world. You know, what if you're dealing with the VA, tell us about how that's working out for you. If you're having problems, let us know so we can talk to you about your cases, and this helps other veterans get an idea of what's going on. If there are any Camp Lejeune veterans out there, I'm on that Camp Lejeune water contamination website. There's about 16,000 veterans on that website, and if any of you guys or women are listening to the show, you know, call us at 1-888-627-6008. So I'm going to send it back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, we're trying to line up a lot of exciting and informative guests for this year. Next week on our show, it'll be our privilege to have retired Navy Rear Admiral Kent Davis, who is currently the commissioner, the head of the Alabama State Department of Veterans Affairs. So our listeners in the state of Alabama will be particularly interested in hearing what Admiral Davis has to share with us about the good things that his State Department of VA does for veterans in that state. And veterans and family members and friends in other states ought to be interested, too, in hearing what Alabama's doing. Perhaps they can copy and share those ideas in their own states. And at the end of the month, we're going to have John Wells with the Military Veterans Advocacy Group. He's been on our show before. But I would say that if there was any single person most responsible for the successful enactment and coverage application of the Agent Orange rules to the Vietnam Blue Water Navy veterans, it's John Wells. He'll be on our show on January the 27th. So next week we're going to have retired Rear Admiral Kent Davis from the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs. On the 27th of this month, we're going to have John Wells, a man who, if there's any one person responsible for the success of the coverage of the Agent Orange rules to the Blue Water Navy veterans, it's John Wells. With the Military Veterans Advocacy Group, he was responsible for the successful case of Procopio versus Wilkie, and he was very active in lobbying Congress and has tremendous insight. But on his behalf, in advance of his appearance on our show, I want to mention for anyone, particularly veteran advocates, whether you're a VSO or whether you're a Blue Water Navy veteran yourself, or if you're an attorney that represents veterans, mark your calendar for February 1st of this year. It's a Saturday. If you're going to be in Tampa or anywhere near Tampa, the Military Veterans Advocacy Group is sponsoring a three-hour continuing legal education course on the Blue Water Navy rules and the VA. It's going to be very intensive and thorough in its scope, even though it's just 3 hours. And if you're interested in more information, you can call John Wells, his phone number. If you want to grab a pen and paper, I'll give it to you in just a moment. But John Wells, the Director of Litigation for the Military Veterans Advocacy, his group, his phone number is area code 985-641-1855. That's area code 985-641-1855. That's John Wells, Director of Litigation for Military Veterans Advocacy. You can go to their website, which is militaryveteransadvocacy.org/reception.html to register for this 3-hour seminar. Again, it's February 1st. It's in Tampa. It's at the Marriott Tampa West Shore Hotel, which is very close to Tampa International Airport. It's very affordable, and if particularly if you're an advocate, a veteran service officer, you're going to be dealing with these issues. So we have a lot to talk about. I have a lot more to share about the Blue Water Navy issues, but before I do that, Rick, anything further you can share from your discussions with VA people on the Blue Water issue?
No, just that the decision came down many, many, many months ago, and there was basically a moratorium on processing any of the Blue Water claims because they had the people at the regional offices really had no clue as to direction. They weren't being trained, which apparently they're now doing. But you know, it's just been more delay. And you know, these Blue Water vets have been waiting decades now to finally get the just compensation. We've had a couple of veterans who are Blue Water veterans. You know, their claims unfortunately can proceed because the law hadn't changed. So,
right.
So it's just, you know, hopefully they're going to get it right, and they'll start moving these cases out the door come January and February, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that that last week on December 31st, the VA in Washington put out a press release in which it announced that the VA would start deciding claims for the Blue Water Navy Vietnam veterans as of January 1st, 2020, so, you know, several days ago already. And they actually were very specific. They said they'd start processing them at 12:01 a.m., January 1st, 2020, but 12:01 a.m. Philippine Standard Time, which I thought was interesting. And then, but the reason being is they actually have a regional office, a VA regional office in the Philippines, because of the number of veterans that still live there. In any event, the press release says, go ahead.
So, yeah, just My little Manila Philippines story is that, and I've said this before on the air, that I settled a case for a guy in Alabama back in September. And we were trying to figure out what happened because he hadn't gotten his retro payment or his monthly payments going forward. And I finally tracked it down in the middle of December. And where did it end up? It ended up on the desk of somebody in the Philippines, in Manila.
Wow.
Here, the case was, you know, started out in Alabama. I dealt with the St. Pete Regional Office, Drew, who he and I were the ones who worked it out and got the veteran to 100%. He authorized it. He was then done with it. And then when we finally tracked it down, it was sitting on somebody's desk in Manila. And that person had been on vacation since Thanksgiving, and he was coming back 2 days later. And fortunately, the veteran received his retro 2 days before Christmas, so he was very, very happy. But, you know, you can't make this stuff up, you know.
Well, maybe they put the file in a bottle and floated it on the ocean currents off the West Coast, see how long it take to get to Manila. I don't know. Maybe that explains
the thing. The explanation that I'm getting now is that they have the quote-unquote national queue.
Yeah.
So every veteran's case goes into the national queue, no matter where it starts out. And anybody in any regional office can then pull down from that national queue. Maybe it's the next case up. I don't know how they decide how they're pulling these cases out. But any, you know, someone in New Jersey can pull out a case from St. Pete in Florida. Alabama can pull out something from Hawaii because it's all in that national queue. And the reason it's in the national queue is because this is what I've been told, they need to be able to give work to all these DROs that are out there in different regional offices around the country. And a lot of offices, regional offices, have not had a lot of work, and a lot of decision review officers have been sitting around with their, you know, hands underneath their pants, doing nothing
all day.
Well,
they don't have hearings. Under the new system, they're not called, you know, what used to be called decision review officers are now higher level review, and because they don't have face to face hearings, you could have the person managing the file be on the other side of the globe in the Philippines, or in some other state across the country. You know, I got some correspondence for a veteran who lives in the Villages in Florida today, who fighting the VA for years, up until now with the regional office in St. Pete. He got a letter from the South Dakota regional office. So, you know, like you say, the case through their national queue system has gone farmed to there. And,
the other problem with that I'm finding is that, you know, David, you and I have kind of, because we're here in Florida, we've established some relationships with some of the decision review officers in St. Pete. That relationship has been beneficial to the veteran because it's offered us some transparency. It's offered us communication, and communication is the key to any litigation. And we've been able to resolve cases over the last few years. But now, if you get a case that gets pulled into the national queue, and as you just said, somebody in South Dakota now has the file. Well, we don't have a relationship with anyone in South Dakota. You know, you can try to find an email address for that person, but you know,
that's assuming you even know who the person is. But there's also, I think at their end, it becomes more of an impersonal paper situation, because you're not only, you know, you're not in the same state. You're never going to see this veteran face to face as you would if you had a hearing, you know, at your regional office. Now there aren't going to be hearings at the regional office. In fact, under the new system, once they clear out the legacy, the old cases, under the new system, really the only hearings you're going to get with a human being are going to be video conference hearings with the BVA judge, unless you actually travel to Washington, D.C. So it's kind of, it's depersonalized it even more than it was, and that's unfortunate. I don't think these higher-level review telephone conferences, which the VA itself calls informal, you know, meaning, among other things, probably that there's not going to be a transcript of them. But again, it's not the same thoroughness that you would get in the old face-to-face hearings with the decision review officers. So it's a program that mostly benefits the VA to the extent that it speeds things up for the veteran a little bit. That's really the only positive thing for veterans, because otherwise it really shifts more work to the veteran. It becomes more adversarial really from the beginning when you first file a claim, because you have to be much more thorough in preparing your case, given the fewer options and the less of a duty to assist on the VA once it goes into appeal stage. But let me go back and talk about this Blue Water Navy issue before we talk more about the appeal system. So the VA press release from last week says that as of January 1st, the VA would start processing these claims. And basically what it says, it's implementing the act passed by Congress on June the 25th of 2019, which says that Blue Water Navy veterans who served no more than 12 nautical miles offshore in the Republic of Vietnam between January 6th of 1962 and May the 7th of 1975, as well as veterans who served in the Korean Demilitarized Zone between January 1st of 67 and August 31st of 71, that those veterans can now apply for disability compensation and other benefits if they develop one of 14 conditions which, by law, are presumed to be related to the exposure to herbicides, which are frequently referred to as Agent Orange. So that's the basic point of it. The Blue Water Navy claims are being processed, according to this press release, under the current prioritization criteria. Now, the press release really doesn't elaborate what that is, so we're kind of left to interpret that to mean that, you know, they're typical claims. They're not being prioritized ahead of other claims. And I think that conclusion is supported by the fact that the press release goes on to say that special priority will be given to veterans who are over the age of 85 or have a terminally ill health condition. So that's that 85 and older cutoff for initial claims, you know, that's even higher. The BVA's age cutoff is 75 and older to kind of jump ahead of the line. So in any event, we'll see how quickly they actually start processing these claims. The press release also said that veterans who are filing their very first claim for a herbicide-related disability should use the VA form 21-526EZ, an application for disability compensation and related compensation benefits. But if these Blue Water Navy veterans had previously filed a claim seeking service connection for any one of the 14 presumptive conditions, and you can find that long list on va.gov, just search for Agent Orange, then if the Blue Water Navy veteran has ever previously filed a claim, then to reapply, they have to use a different form. And this is something we talked about last week. They have to use a form called 20-0995, Decision Review Request, Supplemental Claim. It's a supplemental claim aspect. And it doesn't matter how long ago they'd filed and been denied. So as a result of this new law, the VA says that they will automatically review claims also that are currently in the VA review process or under appeal. You can call, the VA has a special toll-free number for Blue Water Navy veteran issues, and that number, if you have a pen and paper, is 1-800-749-8387. That's 1-800-749-8387 for Blue Water Navy veteran questions. So the background for this is that even before Congress passed this law last June, one of the federal circuit courts made a decision in the case of Procopio versus Wilkie that was a huge victory for Blue Water Navy veterans. And John Wells, who will be our guest on the 27th, was a major player in that litigation. So it's a big issue, and we're going to see how the VA handles that. Thoughts on that, Rick?
Well, I'm just I can't help but just chuckle at the I guess the age and the other situation. If you're dying or you're
right.
85, they're gonna put you at the head of the list. Gee, that's sweet.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, that's just, you know, that's almost a slap in the face to every one
right.
of these veterans who this new law affects and who's been waiting for decades. You know, what if you're 84? What if you're 83?
Right.
I mean, come on. You know, and I've had cases where I've tried to expedite a case and the veteran was 1 year away at 74 or 84. And I've gotten a response back from the VA. Well, he doesn't meet the age requirement yet, Mr. Hurley, so tell him to wait another year.
Right.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. Just can't make this stuff up. It's just adds to all of our veterans who just feel frustrated by the process.
Right.
And so, anyway, that's my little thing on that.
Yeah. Well, the list of 14, I'm not going to go over all of them, but I'll hit a few of the ones that we tend to see the most. The regulations now presume that if you develop one of these cancers or illnesses and you were in one of the places where Agent Orange was used, it includes things such as chronic B-cell leukemia, Hodgkin's disease, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, prostate cancer, various respiratory cancers, soft tissue sarcomas, ischemic heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's disease, early onset peripheral neuropathy, which can also be secondary to diabetes. Those are the ones we tend to see. But there are some others on the list. You can go to va.gov and just in the search engine type in Agent Orange. There's a lot of information there. But what we're also seeing in this, and we will see in this new year, as the VA tries to retire the legacy appeals, the cases that were on appeal under the old system, and then continue to process cases that are under the new system. Saw a couple cases today in which the appeals were under the old rules, the legacy system, but the VA had included paperwork that gave the veteran the option to opt in to the new system. So that's a time where the veteran and his or her advocate will really need to discuss and analyze, you know, the pros and cons of staying in the legacy system, you know, depending on where they're at in the system, how close they might be to a hearing, if they can get a sense of that, if they were asking for a BVA hearing, for instance, under the old system, and, you know, what their options are under the new system. And we started to talk about those last week. And, you know, before I turn over to Rick Hurley to get his insights on that issue, because that is an issue. There's still a lot of people that are under the legacy system, and as there is action taken on their case, the VA is most likely going to be reminding them that they can opt into the new system. And the new system basically means that they'd have three lanes, three tracks, if you will, on how to have their appeal process. One is to file a supplemental claim, but the veteran has to have additional evidence that's new and relevant. The second lane is they can ask for a higher level review, which, you know, the major benefit for that, according to the VA, one of the benefits is you'll get a faster decision. The goal with the VA is a decision within 125 days, which compared to the Board of Veterans Appeals is pretty fast, because you might not get a decision for a year or 2 years or even longer, perhaps, with the third track, the third lane, which is an appeal to the Board of Veterans Appeals. And even in that track, you have three choices. You can just ask for a review of what's already in the file. The second choice would be that you're going to submit more evidence. And the third choice is that you actually ask for a hearing, which is going to be a video hearing. So with that background, let me turn it over to Rick Hurley and get his insights.
If you're listening and you have a legacy case pending, do not opt in. No matter what the VA offers you, do not opt into the new system. You want to stay in the legacy system because the VA wants to get rid of these cases. They are trying to get rid of all these cases by the end of 2020. And so you basically have a lot of trump cards to play. And if your attorney or your VSO, who's ever representing you, really has the VA by the you-know-what, because they want to get rid of these cases. So you're going to be in a better position to resolve your case if you're currently in the legacy system than if you're not. If you're not in the legacy system and you're in whatever track David just described,
Or lane,
you might as well just, you're just going to be stuck in that national queue. And, I know David mentioned certain time periods that they're going to try to get rid of these cases. I can tell you from a practical point of view, it's not happening. They're not doing it. They're way beyond those deadlines. So, that's a whole new system that we all have to deal with now, unfortunately. So as far as the legacy issues go, if you are a veteran with a case in the legacy system, stand pat. Work out your case with the VA, and I can almost guarantee that if you're on the fence on an issue, the VA is going to decide the case in your favor, whether it serves connecting your case, whether it's giving you a higher rating. They're gonna do that. Not because it's the right thing to do, but from their perspective, they want to get rid of these legacy cases. So if that's the approach that they're going to take, and it's get resolve your case and get you done, and they can now close you out, that's what they're going to do. So as far as the new system goes, it's a headache. What's that?
I said it's unpredictable too, because your point about the new system. I'd given the example of the higher level review lane, where the VA's goal is to try to make a decision within 125 days. Sometimes that happens. I had a case in the fall of 2019 where I got a call from the higher level reviewer within a month of submitting the form, and we had the phone conference, and now it's essentially being remanded, if you will, for further work. But on the other hand, I had a case, when they started the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, which was kind of the transition program, in about June of 2018, I had a case where I put in a request. The veteran wanted to try to speed the case up. It had been dragging for a long time. So he really wanted to, to opt into this. We opted into the higher level review, and it took a year and a half to get the higher level review informal phone conference, which was ridiculous. So much for their 125-day goal. But what made it even worse is veterans that might think, well, I'm going to get my decision. I'm going to get some closure on it. Well, in this particular veteran's case, it took a year and a half to get the higher level review phone conference, and now it's been a year since that phone conference, and because the higher level reviewer had to essentially remand the case for more work and a new medical opinion, it's a year later, and we're still waiting on a final decision. So it reminds us a lot of the old system, seems to me, except that it's even less user-friendly, if you will. I mean, the VA's duty to assist is diminished, and they really put more on the veteran advocate. That's not to sound negative. It's just realistic about the program. It basically means that veterans and their advocates have to do a lot more work because the VA sure isn't going to do it.
You know, and the other thing, you know, again, because we have these relationships with some of the people down at the St. Pete regional office, and I've got relationships with other regional office staffers, I'm hearing their frustration. I mean, these are people that work for the VA. They're in the system, and I'm hearing their frustration. And they're telling me, first of all, they're telling me as far as the higher level review goes, don't even go there. As far as they're concerned, it's a waste of time unless it's the most egregious of situations. It's just going to get rubber stamped, and nothing's going to come of it. But, you know, to hear their own frustration, I mean, they're just, you know, their frustration is so bad these days. I mean, and I'm thinking back, as I'm saying this, a couple years ago when I first started having these relationships, and I never heard that from these decision review officers. Yeah, they were busy, and, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going on, but they never had the kind of frustration that they're having today. And it's, you know, they're supposed to be doing certain things, implementing certain procedures, especially with this new appeal system, but then they're not getting the training in order to do that. And now the Blue Water thing's coming into play. I mean, there's just so much going on that a lot of these decision review officers are, as this one guy says, we come in to work in the morning and we just duck, keep our head down, and we can't wait until 4 o'clock so we can leave. So,
well, it's pretty,
you know,
nice to leave at four.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they say that they, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, they work from home too. So,
that's,
you know,
true.
A lot of them, they have to, I think they have to spend 2 days a week at the regional office, and the other 3 days they can work from home. Most of them usually start, you know, anywhere from 6 to 7 in the morning, and they usually try to finish up between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. But anyway, so that's just, you know, it's frustration on top of frustration. So to try to get anything accomplished, you know, you really got to work hard.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's just more of a need for the veterans to try to stay on top of these changes. And, you know, it's interesting. I recently received the latest version of the Veterans Benefit Manual from the National Veterans Legal Services Program. It's really a crucial handbook. And every year they come out with, you know, their revised edition based on the changes. And I'm still going through it. It's over 2,000 pages. And but it's interesting how they point out things, and we had briefly talked about some of these last week, some of the hidden traps that are in the new system that that the VA isn't publicizing. For what reason, who knows? Maybe they don't even realize that the traps are there. But, you know, it's supposed to be a system that's user-friendly for the veterans. You know, generally people, you know, I think, you know, Rick, you'd agree, most people don't like lawyers unless it's their own lawyer. And people often complain about the fact how complicated everything has become. Well, blame Congress and blame the VA itself for the complexity of these rules. And it's not, the system isn't as user-friendly as it ought to be. And one example of one of these hidden traps goes to the issue of, let's say a veteran is already service-connected for a disability, and the disability has worsened in its severity. So the veteran wants to put in a claim for an increase. Let's say the veteran might be rated at 30% for a back condition. So the veteran thinks that the back condition has gotten much, much worse and wants to put in a claim for an increase. And he puts in a claim, and the regional office denies it, saying, no, we think the condition is about the same as it was, and we're going to keep you at 30%. Well, under the old rules, let's say the veteran appealed it, notes of disagreement. The regional office continued to deny it, and then the veteran appealed up to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. Under the old system, as we know, that might literally be 5 years after the initial decision. The initial decision meaning the one that denied the increase. So under the old rules, the Board of Veterans' Appeals, when it finally made a decision, would address that entire five-year period of time that was on appeal. Well, here's the trap with the new system under this new appeals system that the VA has. That's no longer true. In that same scenario where the veteran put in a claim for an increase and it was denied and appealed up to the Board of Veterans Appeals, under the new system, the Board of Veterans Appeals is only going to address the severity of that disability from the time of the claim for the increase up to the time of the regional office's decision on that claim for increase. So the fact that the case might have continued on hold for 2 or 3 years waiting for the BVA, the Board of Veterans Appeals, to make a decision, the veteran is basically, the worsening of the condition during that period of time is not going to be part of the Board of Veterans Appeals decision. So that's a trap. It's going to surprise people. And it's going to surprise advocates that don't know this. So the advice given by the National Veterans Legal Services Program is that if you've got a case for an increase and it's on appeal and the condition continues to worsen during the what could be years waiting for the Board of Veterans Appeals to grant you your hearing, if you ask for hearing, for instance, or in any other of the tracks in the BVA lane, that you need to put in another claim. You know, you have to put in another claim, a supplemental claim, and, of course, you need to submit evidence that the condition actually is worsening. And I know, Rick, you know, our approach has always been to get a thorough statement from the veteran, sometimes other people, that family members that might be able to observe the symptoms themselves as a layperson, but also to get one of the VA disability benefit questionnaires completed by their own doctor. So that would be the new evidence showing that the condition is actually worsened. But that's an example of one of the hidden traps that the VA currently isn't telling veterans about in their standard letters, which are already, you know, very brief and cryptic and sometimes contradictory. You're not getting that. So there's a lot to it, and it's a complicated system. So, Rick, you want to move on to some other topics?
Sure.
Or you got any other topics you want to talk about on this appeals improvement and modernization?
No, it's just, you know, what I think the final thing to say about it is the veterans, you know, as David just finished saying, it's very complicated. It's gotten more complicated. Congress isn't doing you veterans any favor by simplifying the system. It's complicating it more and more.
Right.
Therefore, you need to have patience. Therefore, you got to understand you're going to be frustrated, but you have to stay the course, because eventually you are going to win your case. You're going to beat these people down, and you are going to win your case. And it's going to be a nice, compensation day for you. So you want to stay the course. And finally, you want to make sure you have a good team in place. And that team could be your lawyer, your representative, maybe a couple of doctors that are helping you with the disability benefits questionnaires. But you want to establish that. And when you have that nice team in place, you can have some success. Well, David, we can go to some other topics. We can talk about Camp Lejeune.
And also the burn pit issue. One of our upcoming guests, we're going to finalize, but she'll probably be on in February, is Lauren Price of Veteran Warriors Organization. She's an expert on the burn pit issue. But there's a lot of legislation still sitting in Congress about how to address disability claims by veterans that served near open-air burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan and some other locations. They were exposed to a lot of toxic airborne particulates and other things. And, there's been a high rate of various types of cancers and other respiratory illnesses. So there's legislation in Congress. as we've talked about previous shows, I think the ideal situation would be for Congress to recognize research that has been done over decades by agencies like the EPA and OSHA, you know, that addresses toxic exposures and apply that research rather than saying, oh, we've got to start new research. And Congress ought to hold hearings like they did for Camp Lejeune, and they need to put these presumptive conditions in the law, in the statutes, and not wait for the VA, because you know it's going to be years. This is the current generation. This is the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans equivalent of the Vietnam Agent Orange issue. They had these humongous open-air burn pits burning 24/7, burning everything under the sun, and veterans that had no choice of where they would live or work are in constant breathing range of these pits. And these are healthy young men and women. They're coming back with very serious, in many cases, respiratory illnesses and some other kinds of cancers. So check out the movie Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How American Poisonous Veterans. And there's a book by that same title, and very informative. But it's something we're going to talk more in February. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, the burn pit issue is probably going to need someone like a Jerry Ensminger who literally put the whole Camp Lejeune thing on his back, along with other people like Mike Partain, to finally get that through Congress and on President Obama's desk for his signature. So hopefully, you know, we're going to be able to carry that same flag for the burn pits issue. And regarding the Camp Lejeune, if you served at Marine Corps base, Camp Lejeune, or Marine Corps Air Station, New River in North Carolina, you may have had contact with the contaminants in the drinking water there. Scientific and medical evidence has shown an association between exposure to these contaminants during military service and development of certain diseases later on. If you have qualifying service at Camp Lejeune and a current diagnosis of one of the conditions listed below, you may be able to get disability benefits. If you serve at Camp Lejeune for at least 30 cumulative days, not consecutive, cumulative, and this issue's come up many times, I'm on the Camp Lejeune Water Contamination website. There's about 16,000 people on that website, and I see this issue pop up all the time, and people forget that it's 30 cumulative, not 30 consecutive. And you served between August of 1953 and December of 1987, and you didn't receive a dishonorable discharge when you separated from the military, then you'd be eligible for these benefits. And there's eight presumptive conditions for you Camp Lejeune veterans: it's adult leukemia, aplastic anemia, and other myeloplastic syndromes, bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. And who's covered for this? Veterans, reservists, and guardsmen. Again, that's another issue that constantly pops up. I see it on this website all the time. Someone pipes in that he's a reservist, and he's being told by the VA that he is not eligible for the Camp Lejeune water contamination presumptive cases. And I tell him, you've been a reservist for a long time. You were at Camp Lejeune for a cumulative for 30 days or more, and most of them have, if not all of them have. So you are eligible. So, you know, you got to keep these things in mind. You know, the Camp Lejeune water contamination issues has other big problems, and we've discussed this before with the subject matter expert opinions, which is what the VA uses to try and deny as many of these non-presumptive cases as the VA possibly can. So, you know, we got our own fight when it comes to the Camp Lejeune cases, but you got to get these things in. You got to file your claims, veterans. You have to do it not just for yourself, but you have to do it for other veterans. You've got to let the VA know that you're not going away. and that you want your day in court. You want your case fully vetted, and you're entitled to that. But they're not easy cases. You really have to again, you've got to have a good team together in order to overcome the barriers that the VA puts up on these cases.
Rick, you were talking earlier in the show about how disability claims now are getting farmed out to regional offices around the country. What has been your experience as far as that issue in camp Lejeune cases? You know, like the Louisville, Kentucky regional office. What's been your experience with that?
Well, just, you know, all the camp Lejeune cases are now being put under the Louisville regional office roof. One of the things that's really kind of frustrating is, and this happened to me back in November, I had a veteran, and he's from Virginia, and he had non-Camp Lejeune cases pending in Virginia at the Roanoke regional office, and then he had Camp Lejeune issues pending in Louisville. Well, you know, I tried to consolidate the cases so that, you know, the veteran didn't have to go to Louisville or Roanoke would have been easier for him, but, you know, put it under one roof and have one person decide the cases. And it was almost comical because the person in Roanoke said that they weren't qualified to handle a Camp Lejeune case, and the person in Louisville said that we're not handling anything but Camp Lejeune cases, so we're not going to take the ankle or the package issue that he has up in Roanoke, Virginia. Again, you know, so, you know, I had to go to Roanoke, then I had to go to Louisville. The veteran had to drive to Louisville. It's just more of an inconvenience and not necessary. That's the thing here, David. It's not necessary. And when that person in Virginia told me that, she said, well, I'm not qualified to handle Camp Lejeune cases. I said, let me tell you something. I've been to Louisville. I've seen these Camp Lejeune hearings. You are as qualified as the person that is handling the case down in Virginia. Why? Because ultimately, even the Louisville regional office decision review officers, they are relying solely on the subject matter expert opinion.
Right.
They're going to sit there, and we had a 90-minute interview, and she was pleasant. And at the end of the day, she said, well, you know, when we're done here, I'm going to be sending all the evidence you've submitted plus this transcript up to the SME for their opinion. And I said, well, I know what that means. Whatever the SME says, that's what you're going to do. Oh, no, no, she says to me. I have my own mind. I said, you do? Really? I said, you'll be a first because none of you people have ever gone against an SME report.
Right.
And, you know, and we got it. What do we do next? We got to appeal that to the Board of Veteran Appeals. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just more complexity. And like you say, they're going to rely on the subject matter experts, and that's a whole other issue. You know, the credentials and the credibility of these so-called experts on these issues. So,
you know, if there's any DAVs or VSOs that are listening tonight, you know, please, you have to keep demanding a copy of the SME report. The VA is not going to want to give it up, and they're going to hang on to it as much as they can. In their decisions, they will refer to the SME report, but they'll never provide you with a copy of it. So you've got to go on record that you want a copy of it so that when you get to the Board of Veteran Appeals, you can make that argument to the judge that, you know, you're entitled to have a copy of that SME report so that you know, how to counteract it.
How about also asking for the credentials of that particular expert? Because
Absolutely.
At that early stage where you have to, if you don't challenge their credentials, you may essentially be considered to have waived that issue, and then you're left battling with what they said. And go ahead.
Yeah, I've had some complicated federal criminal trials over my lifetime as a lawyer, And I was always given what we call Brady material. I was always given the material that could inculpate my client or exculpate my client. But I was, you know, the government never held this information back. And yet here we are dealing with the VA, and they try to hold back the SME report. You know, Mike Partain's going, you know, he's been on this show numerous times, and he's talked about that. And, yeah. You know, when I speak to Mike periodically, he says, Rick, you know, if you ever get the chance, you know, get a hold of one of those reports and, you know, give it to me and let me, you know, farm it out to other people around the country. Because the VA just, they want to hang on to this stuff. It's like their big secret.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunately another element that's become very complicated and ends up consuming a lot of time and energy by veterans and their advocates. But, well, we're getting close to the wrap-up of our show for tonight. Just want to mention something real brief before we go into our publicity of the Coaching and the Care program. just a couple weeks ago, Congress passed and the President signed into law a major change that affects widows and widowers who might be receiving both survivor benefit plan annuity benefits as well as dependency and indemnity compensation. As those people will know, unfortunately, the law up until now has been that there's an offset, that you can't receive the full amount of both of those, even though the survivor benefit plan annuity is something that was paid into, like a life insurance. Well, after years of complaints by widows and widowers about this, Congress finally did the right thing and changed it, but unfortunately, they just chose to gradually phase out that offset over several years. So this year, the rule is going to stay the same over the next couple years, gradually phasing it out, and it's not going to be until January 1st of 2023, 3 years from now, that the full that someone could receive both the full amount of the survivor benefit plan and the full amount of the dependency and indemnity compensation if they're eligible. All right, Rick, why don't we go to our Coaching and the Care as we're running out of time tonight?
Certainly. Once again, I'd like to give our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching and the Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching and the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. It's ours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind our listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care that they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Close us out there, David.
Thanks. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to our show this evening on the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our producer, Mr. Doug Newsom. Invite you to tune in next week when our special guest will be retired Rear Admiral Kent Davis, who is currently the commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs. Be our special guest next week on January the 13th. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.